I know what you're going to talk about tonight.
Okay, fabulous. Would you like to cover for me?
You're going to talk about corn. And you're looking at me like, corn? What are you
Hold
talking about,
on.
John?
Because ears that don't hear.
Correct.
I know that joke.
I couldn't resist.
For a moment,
I like
for a moment you had me. I'm like, okay, what's the connection of my theme to corn?
that. I'm thinking,
Had
did
to
I
think
miss
about
something?
that,
Yeah.
but not, but I got it.
I thought you were going to talk about my mother-in-law.
Oh,
Uh-oh.
okay. I think now's
Michelle's
a good
right there.
time.
She hasn't moved yet, so.
Now's an excellent time to start the class. Okay. Wow. Rough crowd tonight. Okay, we're going to start with the following. It really is a two-part message that I want to share with you tonight. And it really, most of the time, I try to find something a little bit further down in the Torah portion itself, which this week is Parshat Bo, of which many of the, well, a lot of the Parshat deals with the last three plagues, because we did seven last week, we got three this week, and really getting ready to leave. That's really what goes on. This is the Paschal offering. This is like the last hurrah before we leave. But for tonight, I got stuck really on the first two sentences. We're really not going to get too far past the first two sentences tonight. Sorry. Get your money back. Okay. The parsha begins. Hashem said to Moses, "Come to Pharaoh, for I have made his heart and the heart of his servants stubborn, so that I can put these signs of mine in his midst." And next verse, "And so that you may relate in the ears of your son and your son's son that I made a mockery of Egypt and my signs that I placed among them, that you may know that I am Hashem." In these two sentences, God lays out the reasons why the plagues were brought, the signs and wonders that God will bring about prior to the Exodus. It gives two very distinct reasons. One is in relation to Pharaoh. I'm going to force his hand with all the might and all of the plagues that I'm going to bring. Pharaoh will have no choice. Even though his heart is hardened, he's stubborn, he's not willing to budge, my signs will break him and we will actually leave. But then the Torah says there's a second reason. And the second reason is much more in line with impressing the Jewish people and generations to come that this is who I am. I have the power to do all of this. And you should know this. Make sure that you tell this over from generation to generation. A two-pronged attack of what it is that is supposed to be accomplished. A, against the Egyptians, Pharaoh and his minions, and so that the Jews would know the truth. Correct? Is that a fair assessment of what these two verses are saying?
Yes.
Great. But here's the trouble. I get it if you want to impress upon me that this is to break Pharaoh. But if you want to tell me that this is the sign that you need to make sure that every generation from one generation to the next, from one parent to a child, and it goes on, because this is what happened. I want everybody to know this. Okay, it should be pretty obvious. It plays itself out in a story of where the Egyptians get decimated, the Jews are able to leave, they go ahead, Exodus, move on. Why is this such an important point that the message that's being conveyed, you must convey this from generation to generation? Again, citing the verse, the second one. And so, why am I doing all of this? So that you may relate to your children and your children's children that I made a mockery of Egypt and my signs that I placed among them, that you may know that I am Hashem. Duh. Obviously, we saw what happened. We know exactly the details of it. But to make matters worse, the terminology is very bothersome. If I want you to know a message, you know what I'm going to do? You know what the Tzvi Tachman model of teaching is when you really want to impress upon somebody? Is you raise your voice and you make sure that they're listening. But that's not what my Torah says. The Torah says what you should do is you should whisper into the ears of the children and your children's children. Ooh, talk in the ears. That's such a crazy expression. Why didn't it just simply say, so that you may relate to your children? And what do you mean, you may relate in the ears of your son and or your children? No, I want you to tell over the story to the elbow because the hand is not listening. Of course it's in the ears. Where else would it be? Does everybody see? You see this in the verse? Michelle, you see what I'm talking about? In verse 2.
I do.
It doesn't bother you?
Well, maybe they're trying to do it very directly so that nothing is confusing. They're giving the message with nothing around it. You know, this is what I want you to know. This is important. So I'm going to put it right into your ear. I don't want all the other stuff to come with it. I just want this to get straight through.
Excellent. Excellent. You have now segued exactly where I want to go. There are two major reasons why you would whisper something into someone's ear. One, so that no one else should hear it. I want you to listen and I want you to hear what I'm saying, and I don't want anyone else to hear it. Or I should say, and to make sure that you hear my message clearly and don't listen to all the external, all the other noise, the background noise that others might be trying to tell you. I want to make sure you hear me clearly. These two aspects of listening and drowning out any external noises are the two points I want to share with you tonight. And it really refers to the art of listening. Mm-hmm. Listening, and I'm going to use two English words to differentiate, but let's go about it the following way, okay? It's not this week's portion. It's actually in 2 weeks. It's the portion of Yitro, the story of Moshe's father-in-law, Jethro, okay? He joins the Jewish people. He used to be the top dog in Midian. He was the religious leader amongst the idol-worshipping people. He was a priest in Midian, but he became aware of what was going on and was so moved that he joined the Jewish people. And ultimately, right, he plays a very vital role in Jewish history. But what's really amazing is that the Torah portion that talks about the giving of the Torah, the seminal event that changes the course of history, is found in his Torah portion. The name of the portion is not Torah. It's not Sinai. I mean, I would have come up with 3 or 4 key words. Excellent. I would not have chosen Jethro's name to be the title of the name of that parsha. But yet it is. Why? What is so significant? So our sages tell us a fascinating thing. Number one, to add really to this, to a secondary question, is that the giving of the Torah really should have been its own portion. That's really what it should have been. What is it prefaced with this episode with Jethro, with Yisro? It's more logical that it should have been in the previous portion because that's what he heard. Our sages tell us the parsha begins by Yishma Yitro. And Yisro heard. Doesn't tell us what he heard. It just says he heard all that happened to the Jewish people. Here's the actual expression. Jethro, the minister of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard everything that God did to Moses and to Israel, his people, that Hashem had taken Israel out of Egypt. But what in particular impressed him? Doesn't say. It just says he heard about the whole story. Rashi and many commentaries tell us that what he heard about was the splitting of the sea and the ambush of Amalek against us as we were leaving Egypt. Wait a second. The splitting of the sea? Didn't everybody hear about this? This was not a local event that nobody outside of Egypt heard about. All the nations of the world had heard about this. They all were aware of it. Not only that, but the ambush of Amalek was also well documented. People had heard about this from all over. Was Yisro the only one who heard this story? No. The answer is that many, many people may hear something, but very few will reflect and listen to what's being said.
Right.
Your ear is a physical organ that has a job, and it does an excellent job of taking sound waves and funneling it. That's why we all have these funny looking shaped ears, right? Is because it's an amazing organ that is designed to grab hold of sound waves and channel it into your inner ear so that your eardrum does what it does and the brain interprets, and somehow we all hear this, right? But there's hearing and then there's listening. There's a world of difference. Everybody around the world heard. They heard about the splitting of the sea. They heard about the ambush of Amalek. But only Yisro heard it, listened, and got a message from it. There, that is the world of difference. I love to tell over the story about the great Rabbi Akiva, one of the greatest leaders we've ever had. Rabbi Akiva, told as a youngster, had no connection to Torah, no connection to Judaism and spirituality. He was a very ignorant shepherd. I don't mean ignorant in the sense that he lacked the brain, the IQ. He was a very smart man, obviously. But as far as his involvement in Judaism and knowledge of Judaism, it was jokingly, he didn't know an aleph from a bet. Really didn't. He didn't have a Tuesday night class to teach him the deeper meanings of the letters. It just wasn't available back then. No iPods, no podcasts. He was an ignorant shepherd. He had nothing to listen to except classical music, probably. Okay. But the story tells, how did he become the great Rabbi Akiva? So the story is told that when he was out shepherding his flock, he came to a well so that he can give drink to the animals. And he sees there a rock. He sees around the well a rock that has a hole in it. And he's amazed. He's like, that's interesting. Rocks don't usually have holes in it. So he's sitting there and he sees every few minutes another drop of water either comes out of the well, whatever, a drop of water hits on that exact spot. One, and then another one, and then another one. And he asked himself, well, how did that stone get hollowed out like that? And he says, whoa, one second. It's the constant drop of water keeps hitting and eroding the rock. And he made the following observation. If water, which is so permeable, it is so flexible, it just, you know, it's not exactly the hardest item, yet it could hollow solid rock, then I've heard stories about Judaism. I've heard stories that the Torah, which is as strong as iron, that obviously can have an impression on my soft heart, on my flesh and blood. And he made a decision that he was going to find out a little bit more about his Judaism. That's the old story, but there's a more modern story, similar story. They tell a story about a man who decided he was going to do his wife a favor and he was going to make dinner one night. I know, it's not a true story. But there's a man who go ahead and he's going to make dinner for his wife. So he puts up a pot to boil. Okay, I don't know. He's probably making noodles because that's probably all he knows how to do. Fine. Next thing you know, he observes that the pot cover keeps lifting up by the pressure of the steam. So he noted it. Oh, interesting. And he explored it and he says, whoa. He started noticing that if you're able to bottle up the steam, it can generate a tremendous force. So he investigated, he researched, and ultimately this gentleman was the founder. He produced the invention of the steam locomotive. Now, was he the very first person to make dinner for his wife? Maybe. But was he the first person to observe the steam coming up? Of course not. But what's the difference? The difference is that he listened to what was being done there. He noticed, he observed, and he took the lesson to heart. He didn't see anything new. Millions see it on a daily basis. The answer is that he listened to what it is he was seeing. He thought, he reflected on the events. We face this difficulty, unfortunately, in life too often. And that is, we go through life without reflecting and listening to what's being said or seen. I don't mean it only in the hearing sense. I mean, even what we see. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living through historic times. And I mean that in the most wide spectrum I could possibly mean. Politically, globally, economically. I mean, we're living through historic times. If when all of this is over, look forward in 5 years, which God willing will be long over by then. If nothing in us have changed, then all we did is hear it and we didn't listen one bit. And shame on us. Do you know why the story of the giving of the Torah is named in the Parsha for Yitro? You know why? Because before God can say in the Torah, and God spoke and said, I am the Lord, you have to learn what it means to listen. You can't appreciate God sharing the most precious pearls of wisdom that can enhance your life if you've never mastered the art of listening. And you know who can teach us that? Yisro. Yisro is the perfect person to teach us that lesson. He knows what it means to listen, not just hear something. He heard what everybody else heard also. He heard about the miracles of what happened with the Exodus. He heard about the ambush with Amalek. But then he listened and said, whoa, if this is really what happened, then I need to do something about this. The ear needs to be receptive to listen so that the message is not lost. Therefore, the episode of Yisro has to precede the giving of the Torah. But we have a problem. We have a real problem that prevents us from doing that. We're so dang busy. We are so busy that we don't take the time to think. I'm not going to say that we're lazy. I'll give ourselves a little more credit than that. But we're busy. And I don't care if we're retired or not. We have things that occupy our day. Don't think for a moment that that's a coincidence. There is a ploy. It is the trick and the strategy of the Yetzer Hara, of your evil inclination to keep you busy. You know why? Because if you're busy, you don't have time to think. And if you don't have time to think, you don't have to make any changes. You got too much time on your hands. You start thinking, is this really right? What should I be doing? Could I be more productive? I really should reach out to that friend who I used to be close with. But if you don't have time, you don't have time to go to the bathroom. You don't have time to think about global plans, about changing your character and being a better person. You know who is the master of this, who really understood the idea of keeping people busy?
Pharaoh.
Pharaoh is correct. Brilliant. He was a brilliant man. Let's go back to last week's portion, 2 weeks ago, I guess, of where Moshe comes to Pharaoh for the first time. And he says the famous words, right? Let my people go. God said, right? And of course, Pharaoh's like, what? Never heard of him. I don't know what you're talking about. But what's his next move? Pharaoh's next move in this chess game between him and God.
Make the brick more.
Yeah.
Take away the straw.
Quota of bricks that you still need to build the cities. But now go get more straw. Get it on your own. Now, If Pharaoh wanted to run a Fortune 500 company, he would fail miserably. Miserably. Why? It's because it's clear that your workers aren't working hard enough. They got too much time on their heads to think about these grandiose plans about leaving. Yeah, I was thinking about it, boss. You know, I only really get 2 weeks vacation. I've really been working here for long. I should really... Buddy, get your tuchus back in the chair and get back to work is what I would say in the nicest possible way, of course, right? But what does Pharaoh do? He doesn't say, okay, I'm going to give you another project. build me more cities. That would have been the efficient thing to do. If your workers aren't busy enough getting the job done, give them more work, get more accomplished. But that's not what he does. Pharaoh goes ahead and he says, make your own bricks. But the output is going to be the same then. You're just working harder. You're still going to only produce the same number of bricks. Why don't you ask them to do 10% more? Then you get 10% more productivity, greater profits. I mean, that's the way to go. Even I know that. I'm not in the business world. Pharaoh is no dummy, though. That's not the end game. The end game is keep them busy. Don't give them time to think. If you keep people busy, they don't have time or the energy to think about anything else. So we all face this trouble. It's human nature. Okay, so you've heard me speak long enough, ladies and gentlemen, and you know that there must be an answer to this question. God knew that this is human nature. So then what's the antidote? How do we get out of this ridiculous circle and cycle that we're in of constantly going around and doing more and doing and doing and doing and no time to think? If that's what the ploy and the strategy of our evil inclination is, then what's the antidote?
Shabbos.
That's correct. Shabbos. It's exactly what it is.
Well said.
It's exactly what it is. Perfect. Because that's what it, on its most simple level, you can't do certain things. You have to stop what you're doing. This level, that level, biblical, rabbinic, whatever. The bottom line is that it's not a regular day. You cannot run your day Shabbos the way you ran Sunday through Friday. It just can't be. It forces you. You know, I as a kid, I used to watch a lot of sports and I still love it. I don't know if they still have it, but there used to be something called TV timeouts, of where they would stop the game at a particular point. If it's basketball, it's a change of possession. No team called timeout, but the ref signals it's a timeout. Why? Because the TV needs to make money. The network needs to make. It's called a TV timeout. It's a forced timeout. That's what Shabbos is, folks. Shabbos is a forced timeout. You got to do it. You didn't call for it? Tough noogies. That's the way it is. You got to take a break because that's how you take time to think. That's what Shabbos is all about. It's a constant reminder week in and week out that God created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh, giving us the ability to put aside some of the demands and the pressures of daily life and get back to what is important. That's what Shabbos is all about. Shabbos is that timeout. Even the laws and the restrictions, if nothing else, it creates an environment for reflection and contemplation. That's what it does. So lesson number one about why it's so important to tell it into the ears of our children and our grandchildren and future generations is so that they learn to listen. There's a message here. We're not just telling over a story. Listen to the implications of what this story means. We hold our heads up high when we sit down at the Seder and we say, God took us out of Egypt. He took us and made us a free people and gave us a Torah. Oh, nice story. Pass the matzah, please. Right? Then you miss the whole point. Oh, can I have another cup of wine? You missed it. Says the Torah at the outset, right here, the reason besides for punishing Pharaoh's hardened heart is so that you may relate into the ears of your children and your children's children. Make sure they hear it well. Make sure that they are listening. That is step one. But there's a second part. And that I think is really the more not as well understood. And Michelle, really, you hit it on the head. And that is, you also have to make sure that we train ourselves and our children and future generations of how to tune out all of the garbage that's going to erode the message that we want to convey to our children. If you look at it from a purely, if if I were a non-believer, if I was an atheist or an agnostic, I would probably go along with the line that says, don't get so excited. The sea split when they passed by because it happened to be there was an east wind that came about and it was just the right geological atmospheric pressures. And I would make all of these good excuses as to how it happened. And I can't prove it to you otherwise, because if I say the word, well, God did. Whoa. Don't bring God into this. God has nothing to do with this. And everything can be explained away. Everything. If you go ahead and you just absorb everything, you know, last when we were talking in the alphabet about the letter pay, right? We said there are times you need to speak and there are times you need to be silent. Well, the same message can be there are things that you need to hear and there are things you should not be listening to. You see this little flap at the bottom? Do you ever wonder about that? Why is it so flexible? You know, it's not a joke. The Chafetz Chaim himself wrote this about in his book about the laws of Lashon Hara, about not speaking ill of others. He talks about the design and he says it's because you can flip it up and cover your ear so that you don't listen. You don't have, I mean, I guess you can do that by your nose, by closing it, you can't breathe, right? Every one of your mouth, you can close. Your nose, you can close. Your eyes, you can close. Well, I don't have anything for my ears. Oh, but you do. It's the flap. It closes it. There are times we have to learn to ignore what others are saying. And let me be very careful what I mean by that. Many of you, probably all of you, have heard there was a book many years ago, probably came out, I don't know, 20 years ago, easily. It was a great, from Mitch Albom. It was called Tuesdays with Maury. Do you remember that book?
Yes.
It was a very good book. Very good book. And it really had a lot of great lessons. My only issue with it is that Mitch Albom took all the credit for it and he forgot to really give credit where he got it from. And that is he stole it right out of the Torah. All of those lessons are from some of the Hebrew school that he went to. He learned all this stuff. But okay. It's a great book, and I recommend it if you haven't read it. It's a great book. Tuesdays with Maury. In it, he makes such a great, such a beautiful Maury. Does everybody know the story? No? Arlene, check it out in the library or find it online. It's really good. It's an excellent book. He quotes from this Maury. It was his teacher, right? Here's the quote. And you have to be strong enough to say, if the culture doesn't work, don't buy it. Mm-hmm. If the culture doesn't work, don't buy it. We know this intuitively, but sometimes we fall into the trap. Well, but that's what everybody's doing. This now becomes the societal norm. Well, everybody's doing it. Who says it's right? Just because they're doing it doesn't mean it's right. The Mishnah tells us the following. I love this. And maybe one day we're going to do a series on this. Lessons learned from animals. The four-legged creatures, not the two. The four-legged creatures. Right? There's a passage in the Talmud that goes through various animals, their character traits, and what we as human beings could learn from them. It's fascinating. You learn diligence from an ant. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see an ant relaxing? Yeah, me neither. They're always on the run, always doing this, running from this, getting this piece. And their level of, I mean, one ant carrying a thing that's twice its size, a crumb, I mean, that's, yeah, lessons from that. And the Talmud goes through various lessons. One of them that the Mishnah quotes teaches us the heavy uz kenomer. You should be as bold as I think they translate it as a leopard. Be as bold as a leopard. Okay. What makes a leopard so bold? Nobody here? No zoologists? Huh.
Travels at night.
What makes it so bold then?
It's dark.
What?
It's for camouflage.
camouflage. Okay. It knows how to, it's a very good hunter, right? But so is a lion. And tigers and bears, oh my. So whatever, the whole discussion. But what does it mean to be bold? How do you understand that? I'm just throw it out there to you. The Mishnah is telling us that we should learn a trait of boldness from this animal. What does that mean? I should
be brave.
Be brave. If somebody ticks me off, I should tell them what I really feel. I should be bold enough to share what's on my mind, right? No, don't do that. Don't do that. What were you going to say, Alan?
Take the initiative.
Good. Take initiative.
Go against what somebody, go against the tide. Brave enough to go against what others say.
Very good, Robin. Many of the commentators really zero in on that point. They really do. And they say it takes boldness to go against what everybody else thinks. That's really bold. I'm willing to stand. Listen, for those of you who know me, I am for the most part a conformist. I am. I stay within the boundaries. Every now and then I like to push it, but generally I'm a conformist. But on the other side of it, I am not a conformist to just do what everybody else does. I have a certain individuality that I am proud of. And I will be bold enough to say, that's not the way I feel. We're in a meeting, Liz, you can say, I've spoken up and say, I have a different perspective. Everybody looks at me like I'm crazy, but okay. That's boldness. To be able to say in a nice way, I'm not looking to start any arguments and get into fights, but there is a certain element of boldness that's required where everybody or the society's values is one way. And I say, as Maury did, you have to be strong enough to say, if the culture doesn't work, don't buy it. And I don't. That is a tremendous lesson. You're listening, you're hearing what everybody else says, and it does seep in. But do you have the strength, the boldness to not listen? You can hear it, but don't listen. Is it going to erode what you really believe? And again, I'm not talking about of where you don't know information or you don't have a strong opinion about something, and you're taking in, you're welcome to do that. But if there's something, everybody on this call is a principled individual. You all have what you believe to be the right things to do in life. You've all chosen that path. So you are principled, and you hear others who may not share that with you, and you start to doubt yourself. The Torah tells us you also have to tell it into the ears of your children and grandchildren. Why? So that they are listening to what you have to say and they can block out some of the that doesn't fit with your principle. I'll tell you a few interesting passages about this. Number one, most don't know this story. And that is that the Midrash tells us that when Noah was on the ark, Noah and his family, so they were on the ark for about a year. How did they survive? So the Torah says that they brought along provisions for all the animals, all the creatures. And it was Noah and his family's job throughout their journey inside the ark to take care of all the animals. Many of us are familiar with the story about Noah was late in serving food for the lion, and the lion took a little bite out of his leg. Okay, fine. That story, you know it, you don't know it, fine. But what most don't know is there's a story about a bird. There's a bird on that ark. In the language of the Medrash, it's the Arshina bird. The Arshina bird. And the Medrash tells us that because of what he did, he was rewarded with everlasting life. I don't know. Maybe it's the phoenix, that famous, you know, the phoenix that lives for, I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. But what happened with this Arshina bird? So the Midrash tells us that Noah and his family were busy feeding the animals, but the Arshina bird is watching all of this and he doesn't kvetch. He doesn't whine and complain. He remains still, not complaining. Why? Because he said, I see how hard, how endlessly you and your family are running around. I decided that it is better to go hungry than add another burden to your chores. That's what I decided. Now, at face value, it's a very nice display of kindness. It is. Have that kind of sensitivity to all that Noah and his family were doing. I get it. But there have been many, many such stories throughout our history. What's so unique about this bird that it gets a blessing of everlasting life because it was kind and was sensitive and didn't want to make it a little too hard for Noah and his family? The commentaries tell us because you have to look at the times in which it lived. The times that there were marked by cruelty, insensitivity, thieves, cheaters, oppressors. Remember, Noah's on the ark for one reason and one reason only. The society around them was so degraded, it needed to be destroyed. This bird's sensitivity at a time when no one else had sensitivity, where everybody else was all about it's me, 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 right? It's the I generation, iPhone, iPod, iPad. Just kidding. Okay. But that's what that generation was all about. And yet this bird had the sensitivity to say, I don't buy it. That's not the principle I believe in. Yes. Kindness at that time was all but obliterated. This bird's act represented the opposite tendency of society, willing to go against the conventional wisdom at the time, go against the tide. I have down here in my notes, I found it, and I don't remember where I saw it, but there seemed to have been somebody named Stuart White. I don't know if he was an author. I should have written it down. Most of you are probably going to Google it while I speak, or Wikipedia or something, okay? But this Stuart White said the following, such a beautiful quote. He said, do not attempt to do a thing unless you are sure of yourself, but do not relinquish it simply because someone else is not sure of you. Bam. Great quote. Great quote. I'll say it again. Do not attempt to do a thing unless you are sure of yourself, but do not relinquish it simply because someone else is not sure of you. You know what's right. You know what happened, God said. You were there at the Exodus. You saw my miracles. You saw the plagues. You saw what I did. Make sure you teach that story correctly. Make sure you understand and convey it. You'll hear 65,000 other theories as to how and why and when and who. Fine. But make sure you listen to the words and stop listening to some of the other stuff. This is really, and I've spoken about this before, but it's worth repeating. The essence of being a Jew is not just accepting what everybody else thinks. That is our essence. The word, there's three words for Jew in the Torah. There's the word Ivri, like the word Ivrit, Hebrew language. There's the word Yisraeli and the word Yehudi. Those are the three common words that are found in the Torah to describe a Jew. But all three have the same connotation. The word Ivri comes from the fact that Avraham, God calls Avraham, Avraham ha-Ivri. Abraham the Hebrew. That's just a borrowed expression. The word Ivri comes from the word Aver, which means on the other side. Think about it. Put yourself in Abraham and Sarah's shoes at that time. The rest of the world believed in polytheism. Everybody, there was this God and that God and everything. And comes along this dude, Abraham, and he says, I have a question. If there's this God and that God, then, and he starts asking all the theological questions, and he's upsetting the whole cart, and he's like, there must be only one God. Everybody's up in arms. What the heck are you talking about? What kind of blasphemy is this? Abraham, if you wanted to pick, everybody's on one side of the equation. Abraham is standing alone on the other side. Nobody thought he was normal. Certainly, let alone right. King Nimrod threw him in the furnace, threatening him to say, stop blaspheming. You can't go around talking like this. Abraham says, I got to do what I got to do. He's called Ivri because he's Aver on the other side of the issues, always. We are called Ivrim, the Hebrews, because that's who we are. Yisraeli, the name Yisrael comes from our patriarch Jacob. He was given that second name Yisrael when, after he struggled and fought with that angel, he was given the name Yisrael because it meant to struggle and fight for what you believe. Same idea. He wasn't willing to just say, okay, if that's what you want me to believe, I'll do that. No, this is my principle. And if I have to fight tooth and nail for it, I will. And Yehudi is no different. Yehudi, there's different explanations for this. Two of them is that in the story of Joseph, right before he reveals his identity, what is the tipping point at which he finally can't control himself anymore? Is because his brother Judah came and said, I will not stand by idly and let you take Benjamin as the slave. I won't do it. And if I have to fight you for it, I will. Take me as the slave and let Benjamin go because I can't have him not come home to dad. He was willing to go against whatever it was going to take. That's one reason. The other is the word Yehuda, Yehudi, is related to the word Yechidi. The Hey and the Chet are very similar letters. Yechidi means individual, standing alone as by yourself. Because that's who we are. Every aspect of what it means to be a Jew means I don't just accept it because that's what everybody else says. If the state of Israel had agreed to just do what everybody else wanted us to do, we'd be swimming in the Mediterranean years ago. But that's not who we are. We don't just say yes, and we don't just say no. We think, we reflect, we internalize, and we stand for our beliefs, no matter what. Does it cost us our lives sometimes? Yes. But you're right? Someone, what's the expression? If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. We stand for something. That's who we are. We are the people that are supposed to be setting the standard of what is right, what is moral, what is ethical. That's who we are. So yeah, the Torah makes it a very, very clear in this part that tells us, if you want to know why God says, why am I bringing all of these plagues and all of that the Exodus has? Number one is to break Pharaoh's stubbornness, but just as, or perhaps even more importantly, tell it over into the ears of your children and grandchildren. This is the story, and it has implications. You need to reflect on it. You need to internalize and listen to the message, but as well as make sure you have your buffer, make sure you have your blockers in place to not listen to the other that might be thrown your way. Be an individual. Don't just go along because that's PC or that's conventional wisdom. Think as an individual. Be strong with that. That's what you have to do. To me, these are the concept of ears not listening. Yes, ears have to listen, like we said before. But there are times of where the ear must tune it out. Don't let it erode what your principles are. That's why it's such a strange expression. Tell it into the ears of your children. Yeah, it's the only way. So that they listen carefully to what you're saying and not necessarily what they're hearing from others. Question. It's a good message. It really is. It's a great message. Yes, Robin.
I'm not sure it's a question. I guess it is a question. It's somewhat related, but not necessarily about everything. It's related to the Pharaoh. So part of what I was always thinking was that people worshiped Pharaoh like he was a god. And so God wanted to show that Pharaoh was not a god, that he was the god. I guess is that related? So he wasn't listening. And so that's what God was doing.
I mean, Pharaoh is the epitome of not willing to accept that there's a God in this world. And therefore everything is explained either through natural causes or through some kind of trickery. Let me ask you, in Pharaoh's own mind, did he really truly believe he was a God? What do you think?
No, of course not.
I mean, I think he wanted people to worship him.
I'll ask the question again. In Pharaoh's own mind, did he think he was God?
No.
It's hard. I'm torn a little bit. Part of it, I think he deluded himself into thinking it. Except, Robin, I go with Monroe in this because at the end of the day, he had to go to the bathroom.
Right. He went to the river.
He had to go in the river. You ever wonder about that? Why is Pharaoh every morning he's got to go out to the river? Yeah. I don't know about you, but when I get up in the morning, that's the first place I got to go. Yeah. So Pharaoh can't do it on his own. He's got to go to the river, you know? No, right? The sign by the pool, right? So the Nile River had plenty of ool. But on the other hand, I do think you're right that he considered himself, you know, if you tell enough people enough times and people give you, you start believing it. So God was going to break him and said, you are totally incorrect in your own mind and in the minds of all the people that you've convinced that you're in charge. It's a lie. And I'm going to show it to you and all of your people and the rest of the world.
That sort of connect to today where there's people out there, whether it's sports figures, political figures, celebrities, that people supposedly worship in God. I mean, is it related to the pandemic we have now? I mean,
there are, I don't think it's unique to this generation. I think it's true of leadership and positions of authority in general. We are the most susceptible to think we are God when we have those positions of authority. We are the most susceptible at that point. It's for that reason, by the way, Robin, that the Torah has a special mitzvah that does not apply to anybody except the king. The Jewish king has a mitzvah that none of us have. That's, you know what the mitzvah right is?
Right.
He has to keep a Torah with him at all times. Small little Torah. Wherever he goes. Why? Yeah. To remind him, nobody is above God's law. Nobody. I don't care what position of authority you have. Leadership doesn't matter. There is God's law that applies to man, woman, and child. I don't care what position it is.
How would you, Rabbi, how would you define the difference in the Shema saying, you know, hear Israel, listen Israel?
Perfect. When I say Shema, I have three things in mind. I pause on that word, Shema Yisrael. In my mind, I think three things. One, hear, listen and accept, because they all really have the deeper connotation of the word Shema. Shema means to hear. But as we've taken it one step tonight to understand, hearing is not, that's just a physical thing. You heard it. But did you listen? And did you then internalize and accept it? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, is a statement that I am hearing, listening with my head and my heart, and accepting it, internalizing it. That's what I have in mind when I say that word Shema, because it's all inclusive. Do you hear what I'm saying? Anything else? Any other questions?
Could you, John, also add,
John, before you get that, I haven't come up with the answer. I've been thinking as I'm finishing up, like, how can I connect this to corn? How can I connect this to corn?
I was thinking, could it also be included? It wasn't, but eyes that don't see. I mean, obviously, they saw the 10 plagues. Yet even when they were leaving and getting to the sea, all of a sudden they lost their faith again.
Right.
Hey, wait a second. What are you doing? The sea's not going to split. Pharaoh's chariots are behind us. But then seeing the sea split, that was something that you know, you would definitely remember and contemplate. That, I think that was a...
It's true. It's true. But I'm going to ask you a hard question. Which one has a greater impact on a person, what they see or what they hear?
What they hear.
They hear.
It's pretty fascinating. Our religion is not based on what we see. It's what we heard. So much of what, it doesn't say God appeared to the people. God spoke to the people. The prophets speak. It's about listening. Your eyes, this is the beauty of magic, folks. The eyes can be deceived very easily. you're hearing. If you heard it, you heard it. So what we saw was not necessarily as strong of an impact, which explains why it didn't have the impact that it could have and should have. But listening, that is a huge deal. We once talked about this. I'm not going to hold you to it because I'm just remembering it now myself. When we went through the different tribes, right, the names. So the first of Leah's children was Reuben, Reuven. Comes from the word Reu, to see. It's related to that word. Reu Bain, see a son. But the second son, Simon, in Hebrew is called Shimon. And the root of that word is Shema, hearing. It's going in a certain progression. First she says, thank you God for seeing my affliction. But then she says, wow, a second child? Not only did you see my affliction, you heard my cry. You heard the anguish in my voice. Oh, and now you granted me something more, a second child. Wow. And from there, it continues to grow. Very often, the word that's heard has a greater impact than what the eye sees. I'd have to dig it up somewhere. I think I once read an article from Rabbi Sachs of blessed memory. He had a whole article about this concept, about hearing versus seeing. And I think this is the, along the lines of what he said. Anyway. Yeah. All right.
I'm thinking of when God gave the Torah, everybody heard. Everybody didn't see. Everybody
Correct.
Heard.
Correct. That is the basis of our religion, is the hearing. Because eyes can be deceived. You can have plenty of charlatans that can come along and perform miracles, perform whatever. But you heard what you heard. We pass things down. We don't sit at the Seder and show the story. Yes, okay, it's nice to act it out, but we tell it over. It's all about the spoken word. So that we listen and we learn the art of listening. All right. Have a good week, rest of the week, everyone.
Here's your connection between the ears and the corn. If you don't keep your ears clean, you'll have corn growing out of them.
Okay. There you go. I would say let's end on that note.
Good job, Monroe.
Okay. Have a great rest of the week, a great Shabbos. And remember, Shabbos is there for you to reflect. Take time to reflect and think. That's why it's there. Have a great week, everybody.
Good evening.
Bye, everybody.